The gospel is from the Gospel of Mark. The apostles gathered around Jesus and told him all that they had done and taught. He said to them, "Come away to a deserted place all by yourselves and rest a while." For many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. And they went away in the boat to a deserted place by themselves. Now many saw them going and recognized them, and they hurried there on foot from all the towns and arrived ahead of them. As he went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion for them because they were like sheep without a shepherd, and he began to teach them many things. When they had crossed over, they came to land at Gennesaret and moored the boat. When they got out of the boat, the people at once recognized him and rushed about the whole region and began to bring the sick on mats to wherever they heard he was. And wherever he went, into villages or cities or farms, they laid the sick in the marketplaces and begged him that they might touch even the fringe of his cloak, and all who touched it were healed. The word of the Lord. My oldest niece teaches high school English up in Minot, and she got into that the way many teachers do in some of these larger school systems. She substitute taught for a year, and of course they got to know her and the quality of her work, and then they asked her back, and she's taught 1 year as a teacher in the school system there. And I asked her, "So what are you doing this summer?" She says, "I'm going to summer school. I'm going for my master's degree." And I'm like, "What? You've only taught 1 year and you're already going for your master's degree? Why?" And she said, "Well, because they'll pay for it, most of it. And because when I get done, it will give me a more and better salary. But because there's more. There's more to learn." She loves English. And the opportunity to learn more is just excites her and just thrills her. So she's going on to grad school. It got me thinking, what about the life of faith? Where is grad school for our faith? Because there's definitely more. There's always more. Well, I suppose you're thinking, "Well, Steve, you did it. You went to seminary. You went to grad school. There it is." And I'm like, "Well, on the one hand, yes, that's true. But very, very few people are going to have that luxury in their lives or even be inclined to do that in their lives. So where is the grad school for our faith?" One of my favorite authors likes to say, it's life. God comes to you disguised as your life. How else would God come to you? He comes to you through the eyes of faith and lets you see that the things that are going on in your life, the challenges that you face, the joys that you experience are all invitations to move forward with him into deeper faith and understanding, to more mature faith. Life just does this to us, right? We start out as kids, we're protected, we're taken care of, it's a wonderful stage of life. But then adolescence happens and we get kicked out. Adolescence kicks us out into the world and we have to find our own identity, something apart from just our families. We spend our 20s and 30s reestablishing our own homes, our own lives, our own jobs, our own education, trying to get our life back together from the disruption of adolescence. We spend our 40s, 50s, into our 60s being productive. Then the empty nest happens. Then retirement happens. And once again, life says there are new challenges. There are new things to face. And then finally, as we get older, we face the end of our life, the greatest adventure, the greatest challenge of all. All the way along, life is just kicking us on to a newer level, a deeper level. A lot of people don't take the challenge. A lot of people don't open their lives to what God is doing. And they don't learn very much. But a lot of people get moved along like that in just a wonderful, wonderful way. The Apostle Paul, in the lesson today, he had some important lessons, life lessons to learn. In Ephesians, he's really given us a master course in faith, but he found himself moved along unexpectedly in his faith. He thought he had it all figured out, and this is the way life is, isn't it? Every time, I've literally said to myself, and there's been a few times, I thought, my life is all together. I've got my friends, family, work, everything just seems to be going in sync, and then guess what happens? It falls apart. Just falls apart. Someone said, you want to make God laugh? Tell him your plans. Because he's got different plans. Plans that will not just keep us coasting, but plans that will help us grow in our life. And that was the way it was with the Apostle Paul. The Apostle Paul thought he had life figured out. He thought, I was born into God's chosen race, the Jewish people. How wonderful. And he says, I'm going to take this seriously. I'm going to make the most of it. He studied, he learned, he taught. He was a devout, devout Jew. The trouble is, when he started to hear about this Jesus and his teachings and how he didn't quite take Judaism as seriously as Paul did, I'm sure it must have bothered Paul a great deal. I bet he was kind of relieved when they finally put Jesus to death. At last, we're done with that troublemaker. But then his followers start cropping up and start teaching the same way Jesus did and start saying that Judaism and faith in God is not everything that Paul, a Pharisee, thinks it is, and it rocked Paul's world. He was so threatened that he felt justified to go after these Christians and even kill them. You know your life has gone seriously off track if you can get to the point where you are willing to kill innocent people and think you're justified in doing it. Paul's life needed a serious course correction, and of course he got it. Jesus appeared to him, literally knocked him down, literally said to him, why are you persecuting these people? By persecuting them, you're persecuting me. Paul, open your eyes. They are my people. It was mind-blowing. It was heart-blowing for Paul. But even more than that, not only did he have to come to realize that these people who he hated and thought should die were beloved and part of God's family, but he had to realize even more deeply and more powerfully that he, who was killing these innocent people, was still also loved by God beyond all knowing. His world was changed. Life threw him a curveball, and he was never the same again. Part of what he focused on was what happened in the cross. And he gives us, like I said, a master class in what was going on in the cross. We've all had the elementary version of what was going on in the cross. And it's a good way of looking at the cross. And that is simply that in the Garden of Eden, human beings sinned and were disobedient. Jesus came, and through his obedience, he went to the cross, and that made it possible for God to forgive us, and if we have faith and live a fairly decent life, when we die, we will go to heaven. That's good as far as it goes, but that's just the basic. Look at how Paul talks about what the cross did. He just makes it so much broader than that. He says, now, he talks about that the Jews, and he was one of them, hated the Gentiles and thought they were justified on that and thought that God loved the Jews and did not like the Gentiles. But now Paul sees that they're all one. They are all loved. They are all redeemed by Christ. He says, but now in Christ, you who were once far off have been brought near by the blood of Christ, for he is our peace. In his flesh he has made both groups into one and has broken down the dividing wall, that is, the hostility between us, that he might reconcile both groups to God in one body through the cross. The cross for him is this great living sign and symbol of unity, of pulling together. I've talked about this before. The root word religion, it's a Latin word, two parts of that word. The first part is re, which means again, you renew, you return, you repeat, you do something again. And the basic root word of there is ligio. Ligio is the Latin word from which we get the term ligament. What does a ligament do in the human body? It connects muscle to bone. It allows us to do this. Without that connection, we can't move, we can't live. Ligio is to bring together, to connect, to unify. Religion is to connect again what has been unconnected. And in the cross, Paul sees deep, deep connections. In the very body of Jesus, he sees those arms stretched out, and on the one side, he's grabbing hold of the Jews, not letting them go. On the other, he's reaching out to all the other people, the Gentiles, and he's holding them together and saying, "You are one." More than that, on the cross, Paul saw that in Jesus' very body, from the top to the bottom, he was holding together heaven and earth, the spiritual and the physical, in one body, and they were always, always going to be connected. Religio. Paul says nothing less than that is happening on the cross. So what are we connecting? First of all, we need to recognize the connection between us and God. Last week I talked about the true self, the false self. The true self, the only self we have, is the one that is connected to God. The one that realizes our life comes from God, is lived in and through God, and is going to God, and has never, ever been disconnected. Jesus showed that in the cross. He and his Father were one, inseparable. And that is our most basic reality too. The second thing that is connected in the cross is we are connected with absolutely everyone else. There is no one excluded. This is our God's passion for each and all of us, and it breaks his heart that we make these divisions and set up these walls of hostility. All of his parables just talk, not all, but most of them speak so vehemently about this unity, this passion for unity that our Father has. The prodigal son. The father has to reach out to his one wayward younger son and pull him back into the fold, but then he has to go out and take his judgmental and self-righteous older son and say, "Come on, son, you're part of this family too. I need both of you here." All those parables about if there's 99 sheep, but one of them is lost, the shepherd holds on to those 99, but he's not going to let that one go. He's going to go out and reach and pull it back. Our faith is to unite us not only with God, not only with one another. It's not in this verse, but Paul talks a lot about it. It is to unite us with all of creation. Nothing less than that. Jesus' body on the cross is holding it all together. There's nothing, nothing excluded. Now, it's nice for me to point this out, but how do we experience this? This can't be just something we know in our heads and say, "Yeah, that was nice. That makes sense, Pastor." How do we get this as an experience at the core of our being? That's where I'm going to jump to the gospel lesson for today. The gospel lesson is a familiar one. Jesus has sent his disciples out. They've been preaching and teaching and even healing people. And they come back, and they're all excited, and they've worked hard to do the mission of the kingdom. And Jesus said, "Well, you've been working hard, but now let me take you away to a place where you can rest." Because, as it said, there had been so many people surrounding them that they didn't even have time to eat. So, on the one hand, we think, okay, how nice. He's giving them a little break, a little vacation at the lake where there'll be peace and quiet. But he says, "You need to eat. You need to rest." If you wanted to take somebody and give them a good meal and a good comfy rest, are you going to take them to a deserted place? Maybe what they needed was not physical food and physical rest for their body. Maybe the rest that they needed to experience was something deeper, and that is to rest in this most basic reality that we are held and loved and one in God. They needed to come away from all the busyness so that they could experience that most deeply at the core of their being. And that's what Jesus did to them. So they could go back and minister at a deeper level. Not just from their heads, but from their hearts and their experience. Jesus invites us to that place of rest too. It's called prayer. It's called prayer. If we want to move from our head knowledge about God to an experience in our heart, it's called prayer. And a prayer not just is saying all sorts of things, but prayer just simply resting in the deepest reality of our life. If we're going to grow, if we're going to go on to the master's, the graduate level in our faith, we need to do that, to find a way to have a prayer that transforms our very hearts. And our tradition has always said silence and solitude is the way to go with that. Now, we don't have to all become monks or nuns and go off and run to a monastery and be quiet and silently pray. But we do, if we want to grow closer, find a way to carve out a few minutes in our everyday life where we can be quiet and still with God and rest with Him. Now, I could talk to you about the techniques of that. I could talk to you about centering prayer, but I don't think I'm going to do that today because I think it's more basic than that. This type of prayer is not some kind of technique. This is a desire of the heart. Jesus is saying to all of you, you live busy lives, and that's great. You're very productive, but you also need time to rest with me, and I'm inviting you to come away with me to a quiet place sometime every day where we can just rest together. And if you hear that as one of the desires of your heart, all you need to do is respond to that. Sit quietly with God and maybe even start out by saying, God, I don't know how we're going to do this. I just know I've heard your call and my desire is to be with you. So let us sit here quietly and my thoughts are going to go crazy. I'm going to worry about everything during the day. I need you to show me how I can just simply rest. Guess what? That's what he wants. He'll show you how. If the desire of your heart is that, God will make it happen. And as you sit quietly day after day, simply resting in that greater blessing, you will experience more clearly, more fully, more infallibly at the core of your being, your connection to God, your connection to one another, your connection to all, absolutely all that there is. Amen.